Today's episode of Open Floor is brought to you by Harry's Razors. Superior razors shipped straight to your door at half the drugstore price. Get $5 off your first order with the code OPENFLOOR at harrys.com. And today's episode is also brought to you by FanDuel. Now that baseball is back, you can try the fun and competition of daily fantasy risk-free for up to $10. Go to FanDuel.com and enter the code OPENFLOOR. Mamba Night was so much cooler than Mamba Day. It was just one of those moments, man, where you just sort of step back in awe. People who didn't watch it will probably roll their eyes at all this because it does look ridiculous with 50 shots. But Kobe was like real Kobe in the fourth quarter. I expected something sad. And then towards the end of the game, it just sort of took off and went to another level. He was like the Kobe of old. He had 15 points in the last 3 minutes and hit the game winner to put them ahead. It was crazy. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line we've got Ben Golliver phoning in from Golden State, the site of history. How's it going, Ben?
It's pretty good. I mean, I got a lot of love for the Bay Area. You get the amazing curry pizzas out here, which is just the perfect thing for a vegetarian like myself who doesn't really like to eat healthy. And then, of course, you get Steph Curry going absolutely nuts to seal off.
That's great. I love it. Just tying it together.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant, right? 73 win season. Honestly, I didn't ever think I was going to see 73 wins in my lifetime. I always, you know, we've talked about this before. I put Jordan on a pedestal. For someone to be able to do it, and they did it without running Curry's minutes up over the course of the season. I mean, he only played 40 plus minutes four times, and it was all in overtime games. I mean, that just blows my mind. So that plus the Kobe factor, unreal.
Yeah. So we'll get to the Warriors. First of all, any fans of the podcast, subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Stitcher. I've actually never used Stitcher, but I think people subscribe. I forget to say that every week. And for today, we're going to talk about the Warriors. We're going to talk about the playoffs. We're going to talk about Randy Whitman. But we have to start. I mean, this was supposed to be a playoff podcast, but we have to start with Kobe last night. I mean, that was unreal.
Yeah, so I've only seen the highlights, but the good news is I'm heading back to LA tonight, and Time Warner Cable will be replaying this game for the next 20 years. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to be able to catch it.
So there was that whole thing with there was the whole like sort of Twitter debate, talk radio debate about what game you want to watch, and you chose wrong, Ben. I'm sorry, you know, like the Warriors were cool, but with Kobe, you never know. It was either going to be 5 for 35 or 50. And he went for 60. Well, it was awesome.
A couple thoughts. Number one, this was a legitimate debate for me. It was the most first world problem I've ever had in my entire life. But I was sitting in a hotel in Portland, not sure where I was going until like midday Monday. I didn't have a plane ticket, didn't know which game I was going to. And I ultimately got the call about the Warriors. And actually, that was my top priority. I was really excited to see it. And frankly, I think I made the right choice as long as they don't come back and win 74 next year. Because if they come back and win 74 next year, like, that will just, you know, completely undercut it. But for me, it's all about the history. You know, I'm the kind of guy who's going to take a box score from that game and frame that. I mean, that's something that, you know, that record really could stand for decades. And I mean, even Steve Kerr said, like, it's sort of like Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak. So from that standpoint, I feel pretty justified with that call. Also,
I feel you on the box score. I actually, when Curry dropped, I think it was 51 in DC, I saved his box score from the Wizards game. Cause they, you know, they hand out these sort of like, it's like in the being back in the '80s, they hand out the box scores on Press Row. And so I saved that too. So I'm with you there. I was on the radio yesterday. I had gone on to talk about the Warriors, and then they asked me which game I wanted to watch. And I said Lakers, because like, you just never know what's going to happen with Kobe. And I could tell that the hosts were like pretty disgusted with me. So you are not alone in choosing the Warriors. And honestly, I turned off, like, I watched the first 10 minutes of the Lakers game, and then it was like, oh my God, like, it was a reminder of how unwatchable that team had been all year. And then I turned on the Warriors, and, you know, Steph had 20 in the first quarter. It was phenomenal. And so I, like, there was a lot of that. And I actually felt bad because it was almost like such an obvious angle for, like, all the hacky columns that, like, Kobe was going out in disgrace while the Warriors sort of, like, set the world on fire, set one of the greatest records of all time. And it was going to be kind of painful. And then it just sort of all changed.
Well, here's the thing. I have to toot my own horn because I hardly ever get a prediction correct. I mean, I picked the Spurs to win the title this year, so that's not going to work out. But
there's still a chance.
But look, and I also said the Warriors wouldn't get 73 as recently as like 3 weeks ago. So I'm wrong a lot. But I believe it was Tuesday morning that I tweeted that Michael Jordan's career high for field goals was 49, that Kobe's was 47, and that the most fitting way for him to go out in his send-off was was 50 shots. He got exactly 50 shots. So I had, you know, not only being in the middle of this Golden State party, and it really was a party. I mean, the whole night it was just kind of a carnival up there at the Oracle, as you would expect. I mean, the fans do such a good job of being quality fans without being spoiled, even though their team spoils them more than any other team in the history of professional sports, probably.
So you're not worried about the amount of Silicon Valley sort of like the douche factor rising over the past few years?
Well, look, I'm going to keep the street cred because I'm all, no matter what happens with the new arena, I'm just going to tell everyone, well, it's not the same as Oracle. You know, that's how I'm, that's the way you ingratiate yourself with the Bay Area denizens. But what I was trying to say was once he had that 50 shot, once the box score went final and it was 60 points on 50 shots, which is just such an iconic, perfectly Kobe line. I was just sitting there in my chair, like, finally, I got a prediction right. Both my arms were raised. I was ready to run back to Staples and steal some of the net, just like Steph Curry took the net. I mean, it was pretty special.
Yeah, you know, it was one of those moments where you actually are just, you kind of have to step back and be that like sappy guy who is like, you know what, it's just really cool to be a sports fan, because it was wild. I mean, I was watching like some of our podcast listeners probably don't spend all day on the internet, but like Mamba Day, hashtag Mamba Day, was pretty rough. There was a lot to handle, a lot of over the top nostalgia. And I mean, I participated, you participated, like we both wrote long things on Kobe. Go read them, si.com. But at the same time, it was just, it was overkill. And like we had to do a round table on Kobe's legacy that was for today. And like, I finished writing that entry at about like 4 o'clock in the afternoon and I was just done. I was like, I've had enough Kobe, bring on the playoffs. I'm ready to move on. And then Mamba night was so much cooler than Mamba day. It was just, it was one of those moments, man, where you just sort of step back in awe, because he, like, people who didn't watch it will probably roll their eyes at all this because it does look ridiculous with 50 shots, but Kobe was like real Kobe in the fourth quarter, and he made more than half of those 50 shots, or I think so.
Almost. You know, I think he was 22 for 50, but the point stands. Okay. Like, 60 on 50 is a respectable ratio. Yeah. I mean, it's not like he had 25 on 50, which honestly, that was also in the cards had he not woken up right.
Exactly. That's what I expected. I expected something sad. And then towards the end of the game, it just sort of took off and went to another level where he was actually hitting shots. He was like the Kobe of old. And then they started, it was like, wow, they might actually like be in this game. Like, wow, Kobe's still killing. Like, he had 15 points in the last 3 minutes and hit the game winner to put them ahead. It was crazy. And I was going into that game prepared to be depressed. I changed the channel after the first quarter and I came back for the fourth, and like at the, it was one of those games where at the end I was like too wired to go to sleep, which is probably the best preparation possible for the NBA playoffs, because I was up till 2:30 in the morning, and it was just very cool.
Yeah. One point I tried to make in our retirement issue about Kobe Bryant was just how he kind of lined up with the cable news polarization of America, right? Like Jordan was basically trying to be everybody's favorite player. I mean, that's sort of how he was marketed, branded, and about halfway through his career for, you know, some of the stuff that was basically a result of his off-court behaviors, Kobe no longer could be everybody's favorite player, right? So he just tries to totally appeal to his demographic. And that's what I loved about this last game. It was a perfect expression of who he basically became in the second half of his career, the guy who, to his legions of fans, could do absolutely no wrong. And to everybody else who didn't like him, he was such an easy target. I mean, if you're a Kobe cynic or a Kobe hater, you look at this game and say, ha ha ha, it's so meaningless. Of course he didn't pass. Of course he shot 50 times.
Yeah, they won their 17th game.
Congratulations, you're the worst team in the Western Conference. Woohoo. But to Kobe's fans, I think he goes out just insanely on top. I mean, age 37 to get 60 points since 1963, that's 5 years older than the next person who's gotten a 60 point game. That was Wilt Chamberlain at age 32. So Kobe is like, it's not, he's like on an island. Like he's completely by himself.
Well, and I like that it will come with a giant asterisk, because like when anytime someone sees that, they're going to be like, well, it came at the end of like a psychotic 2 years where like the Lakers were ostensibly trying to win and ended up tanking, and it was just weird for everyone when Kobe went around the entire league pretending to be like the gentle grandfather. To your point about the haters and the believers, I've always loved Kobe, and sort of with an ironic detachment, because he's kind of just like a lovable psychopath and a weirdo. But it's also crazy, like living in LA, I was there for a little over a year, and it's just like the fervor with which Lakers fans defend him and truly believe that he's one of like the three or four greatest players of all time is pretty wild. And then last night it was like watching that all come together. Like number one, my first reaction was like, how is this real? Like, is this a Nike commercial? Like, I don't understand. And then the second reaction was like, I get it. Like, I understand why people in LA worship that dude religiously. Like Kobe is a religion, and it makes sense if you're from LA and shit like last night happens.
Well, yeah, not only just LA people, and then the, you know, of course he's got the amazing international following, but what about, you know, if there was like a delegate count for the, you know, nominee of the NBA, and Kobe had to rely on his fellow players for votes, I mean, Kobe would win in a landslide. I mean, there would be no contested convention. I mean, all these people coming out, Damian Lillard, this amazing photo of him surprised when somebody told him right after the Blazers game that Kobe had 60. The very best quotes, honestly, from Klay Thompson and Steph Curry last night were about Kobe. They had just had the greatest season wins-wise in NBA history. And Klay Thompson's just out there saying, Mamba style, you know, like, so
that's what I loved it because all day long there were people rolling their eyes, myself included, and then at the end of the day it was like no one cares about the Warriors record. It's like that the Warriors, we will have 3 months to talk about the Warriors, but Kobe owned the stage last night, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I mean let's not discount what the Warriors did though. I think part of the crazy thing to me, and this is kind of the angle that I took with my column, but, you know, right. Michael Jordan, when they won game 70 to finally get past the Lakers, you know, he talked about how the game was choppy and they felt pressure and they never had the rhythm with the offense. And it was against a really bad Milwaukee Bucks team. And they just kind of eked it out 86-80. And basically his line was like, sometimes ugly is beautiful, right? Like you got to win it ugly. And with the Warriors, it was like there was nothing ugly about it. Did they feel any pressure? No. Steph comes out, hits 6 threes in the first quarter. He hits 3 in less than a minute. He goes for 45 and he basically sits during garbage time. Probably could have had 55 if he wanted. You know, they've got Andrew Bogut throwing behind the back passes. You've got Draymond throwing lobs in transition. I mean, even Harrison Barnes can look at that as a positive night. So how many times have we said that on our podcast?
He's been a frequent target.
Exactly. So, I mean, to me, the fact that they won 73 had made it look easy. Yes, there were some pretty recent stumbles against Boston and Minnesota, but I mean, this team is something else. And I said it about last year's squad too, that they were, you know, one of the best teams I can ever remember seeing in person, that the way they flow together. Yes, they had a pretty weak opponent in Memphis. I mean, it really was like lambs to the slaughter in that situation. But man, they had a really, really, really nice showing to close off an unbelievable season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And with that, I think it's time to move past Kobe, because there's only so many ways we could talk about last night without just saying like it was cool. But honestly, after the last week, I think we're all ready for a break. So like the Warriors, the 73 wins, I think you're right that it looked easy at the end, which was part of what made it so impressive. But it was also crazy to see like the emotional toll. Did you watch the Memphis game on Saturday? Last night was the Memphis game also.
Yeah, no, I've been pretty locked in.
Yeah, it's just like you could sort of see them wearing down a little bit, and ultimately that's what makes 73 so impressive, is that like these guys had to show up every single night. And one of the things that I thought watching the Memphis game is that like once they get past all this, and now that they are like they might be even better in the playoffs. They might be more relaxed and ready to just sort of like run through everybody. Well, which is scary to think about.
They should. I don't know if you saw, I tweeted a couple maybe last week, like all the top four seeds in each conference's their records against the other top four seeds. And I think Golden State, they only had two losses all year, and they were so far and above everybody else, including San Antonio, including Cleveland, that like to me the expectation is that they do run through this playoffs. The one thing I'm worried about is a game one letdown. I mean, that's been like a LeBron James specialty, you know, in recent years. But I am worried, like after you get 73, you have this huge party, you cut down the Nets, and then you have a quick turnaround to game one against a team that everybody expects you to beat, and they're coming out with really nothing to lose. That could be a dicey proposition. But to me, like if you're just saying what should they do, they should sweep through the first round. They should sweep through the second round. I mean, period.
Yeah. You know,
they should go 8-0 and wait on the Spurs.
I like the game one letdown. I don't know. It's sort of like the unstoppable force versus the immovable Rockets. Because I don't think the Warriors may be complacent and sort of exhausted after all this, but then that involves putting faith in Houston to show up and actually like have any dignity. And I'm done trusting them this season. Although Michael Beasley in the playoffs will be fun. That's a nice little wrinkle.
Well, the worst person ever to get inspired by 60 on 50 is Michael Beasley.
Or Harden. Like, Harden can pull it off too.
God forbid James Harden sprains his ankle, because Beasley's going for 65 on 55, no doubt.
Yeah, and Harden would be 60 on 53 free throws.
Yeah, which nobody wants to see. But, you know, I'm not predicting a letdown necessarily, but I think that's the one thing standing in between them and a really a pretty cushy run to the conference finals. I think the bracket broke out great for them. I think I've mentioned this before, but I think basically everybody on both the Warriors and the Clippers believes that the Warriors is a significantly better team. In terms of the Rockets, they've got the confidence of having beaten them before. They don't have to mess around with the Jazz's weird style of play, the super slow down, the big bulky and, you know, mismatches and all that. I think they can just kind of play how they want to play. And they have a lot of guys to throw at Harden. I mean, it's sort of the same thing with LeBron during the finals last year. You know, how many different bodies did they have against him? You know, same thing against Harden. They've got a lot of different looks. And they're reasonably healthy. I mean, yes, they're going to be tired, but compared to other times during the season, they're in a pretty good shape. You know, Iguodala's back, Barnes is back, you know, Bogut, all these guys right down the line. So to me, they're entering the playoffs exactly in position to steamroll, and yeah, they should.
So I have one other question about your time in Golden State. What were those t-shirts about?
They said not on our ground. So Warriors Ground.
I was getting like a stand your ground vibe from all that.
Yeah. So Warriors Ground is like one of their phrases. I guess it's just the home court situation. And I don't know exactly why that was the message for the last game. I think maybe they should have gone for go with history. Here's one thing I'll say about Oakland. Like the knockoff t-shirt game, like the street corner t-shirt game.
Oh my God, yeah.
It's unbelievable. Like I went to college in Baltimore and that was like the days of the stop snitching t-shirts or like, you know, I mean, OJ's mugshot t-shirts. I mean, you know, all these ridiculous t-shirts, Tupac t-shirts, like the graffiti style. I mean, all of these you could buy for like $3 on the corner. This is a weird,
I wish I had known that. I mean, I wish I had thought of that because I would have had you buy like $25 worth of t-shirts for me.
I have a whole 50, whatever.
Yeah,
I have a whole side business as a reseller of Riley Curry t-shirts on eBay. But no, like there was,
that's not creepy at all.
Anyway, here's where I was going with that though. All the knockoff t-shirts just said 73, 73, 73, which seemed like the no brainer. But I guess if you're the team, you can't make t-shirts that say 73 before you have 73, because if you don't do
it, that's fair.
Then it's just like a disaster. So I think they were just trying to talk about defending their home court. They were pretty touchy after those two home losses recently, but it wasn't the best look, and I agree. Although I thought the blue looked really good, didn't you?
It was actually kind of refreshing because everything about this Warriors team is so cool. And it was nice to see them with just like the dumbest t-shirts imaginable. And you never want to remind people of the stand your ground law, especially people in Oakland and San Francisco.
But what about the guy with the giant crying Jordan head who was sitting in like the fourth row behind the Warriors bench? Did you see him?
Crying Jordan Nation, man. It's, here we are.
It's unbelievable that this is what it's come to. You've got memes trumping NBA history. Like that guy, his goal was to go to a game, probably spend thousands of dollars, maybe tens of thousands of dollars on his seats just so he could hold up an 8 foot tall crying Jordan face.
I don't get the crying Jordan joke. I mean, we're a year and a half in. I get like it's sometimes it's funny, but I'm not a huge fan in general. And I'm outing myself here.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm with you.
It's a losing battle. It's a losing battle. I'm not fighting back against anybody. Everybody do your thing. But yeah, it's just like shout out to the guy who printed out a giant crying Jordan. All right. Well, I have one more hot Warriors radio debate for you. But first, let's take a quick break. I want to talk about Harry's Razors. Spring is here, and whether you're catching a game, relaxing at the beach, or just going to work, it's time to ditch the winter scruff and feel the sun on your face with a smooth shave by Harry's Razors. With Harry's, you not only get a close, comfortable shave, you get a high-quality, German-engineered blades for half the price you're used to. And like I said last podcast, Harry's has actually sent me some samples. I've never been the type to invest in my shaving kit, but it's fantastic. The high quality shaving cream is great. And I mean, I highly recommend it. It's I now look forward to shaves, which is not something I had ever really done before. And Harry's gives you factory direct prices. They cut out the middleman and ship their products right to your door. So Harry's starter set is the best option for new customers, and it's a great deal. You for just $15, you get a razor handle, foaming shave gel, and three of Harry's five blade German engineered razors. Plus, listeners of the podcast here get Harry's is giving you $5 off your first purchase with the promo code Open Floor. So go to harrys.com right now. That's harrys.com. And make sure you use the code Open Floor at checkout to let them know that me and Ben sent you and Lee and James Goldstein, who is also on the podcast this week. Yes, I really do love the new razors. And let's get back into it. So Ben, one thing that we participated in a round table today. It's going to be like sort of the hot take question for sports radio shows. But do you think the Warriors record matters if they lose?
Well, I'm totally comfortable taking the hot take position on this because I'm also the guy who's scheduled around going to the 73rd win for the points of history. And I'm also kind of planning to like frame the box score from that game just because I'm a history nerd like that. But to me, if they don't win the title, like, you know, it doesn't really tarnish the 73 wins, but it definitely spoils it. You don't want to be the team that was almost or like, oh,
just to be clear, the precise hot take here is that if they don't win the title, then they are frauds and cowards.
Well, that's strong, but I'm leaning that direction. I just think that you have to have the validation. You don't want the asterisk whatsoever, and you just want to be fully in the conversation, not 1 foot in, 1 foot out. And also in a season where not only did you just win 73 wins, but you had a huge point differential, you know, 10.8 point differential. That says dominance. And like I said, they weren't even really running their minutes up. If they wanted to have a higher point differential, they could have. So these are guys, you know, basically they're bulletproof if they win a title in terms of being in the conversation of the greatest teams of all time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So why spoil that? And also another reason why, they kind of have to do it is because if they don't do it, let's not even begin to imagine the horrible things that went wrong, like to get in their way, right? Like it's going to be some injury that nobody saw coming or just some.
Ben, we're about to imagine that. That's the next question.
Okay.
But so my attitude with the 73 wins is about the same as yours. They won't be cowards. They won't be frauds. But obviously this matters less. Just like the 18-1 Patriots matter less without a title. And I also think that the criticism that they'll receive, like 73 will actually work against them in that, like there's been all this sort of building resentment among the NBA establishment of the Warriors. And if they slip up, people will really lose their shit. And it'll be like open season with like Oscar Robertson calls a press conference to declare Steph Curry's history invalid. So I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm rooting for at this point. But I definitely think that this Warriors team is as good as people as like, there's no amount of hyperbole that is too much for this team. And then like, they are absolutely on the level with the 96 Bulls. At the same time, I think the rest of the league is deeper and some of the contenders are a little bit better. And it's going to be close in the playoffs. Throw out your scenarios for a Warriors loss. Lee Jenkins and I had to write about this for the magazine this week. And it's tough because like, it's tough to watch the Warriors come through over and over again and then try to sort of imagine a way that this doesn't work out. But what do you think?
Well, I mean, I think number one, the Spurs just have the perfect series and beat them. Number two, LeBron channels all of his greatness ever and somehow they junk up the series and beat them. Number three, some horrible injury to one of, you know, the Warriors' key players. I mean, those are basically the three scenarios that I can see. But here's my last point on why they have to win the title. Imagine if you're the Warriors' ownership, you don't win the title, and you go to Steph and you go to Draymond, you say, hey guys, we want to hang a banner that just says 73. It's sort of like the Bulls banner with 72,
man.
Except that we don't have the championship banner to go with it. What is their response going to be? Of course, they're going to say,
wow,
don't put it up. You know, there's no way those players would want to put it up if they don't win the title. And to me, that's sort of like checkmate in this conversation. That's why they have to win a title.
That's true. The idea of them hanging up 72 or 73 and losing is pretty painful to think about.
They wouldn't want to do it. They wouldn't do it. I mean, no competitor on that level would want to have that kind of that kind of an accomplishment recognized without the championship. And Draymond talked about the fact that he's not going to feel relief until they win the title. Steph talked about not wanting to screw it up. So I think everybody's on the same page here. Did I miss any scenarios or was there another one?
Well, we talked about the Thunder and the Clippers. Lee wrote that part. I think right now, I mean, it's hard to say with San Antonio because they didn't have Boris for those last two games. And I think he sort of changes things for them a little bit and gives them a better shot against against the Warriors. But it's if I had to choose right now, I think the injuries are obviously like a big deal. And not only injuries to Steph and Clay, but I think if you take Andre Iguodala off the table for a couple weeks, if you take even Bogut, it's like it gets tricky. Like the most beatable we've seen this Warriors team was in the first couple games of last year's finals when Draymond, we still don't really know what was going on with his back, but he wasn't shooting and it changed the whole offense for them. So there are lots of little things that could sort of throw off the rhythm a little bit. If I had to choose one team that could beat them, it's the Cavs. And I think people have been sleeping on how much talent Cleveland has. And they remember that blowout during the regular season. And there's just a lot of things that they can throw at the Warriors and just sort of, like you said, junk up the series a little bit. And then it's like LeBron's been pissed off all year. And I think putting him in the finals, if things get close, like it's not as much of a sure thing as people think.
Yeah, and if I'm Dan Gilbert, you know, I basically get David Blatt a courtside seat during the finals and just sit him there to just kind of egg LeBron on every time LeBron has to look over. Just like, you know, maybe get all LeBron's like high school ex-girlfriends, like whatever you can do to get him into rage mode. I think you should just line up like all of his biggest enemies just right there along the baseline.
Yeah.
And just kind of stoke that, because that really is the way it's going to happen, because I agree they're very talented. And Cleveland's also versatile. I mean, they can go big, they can go small. Not a lot of other teams can do that as well as they can. They've got lots of shooters. I mean, when they're really on shooting, they can spread you out and beat you from everywhere. But the whole thing comes back to, you know, do you get like an A++++++++ series from LeBron game one to game seven? If not, I don't think that they have enough. I mean, guys like Kyrie and Kevin Love, they have so much to prove in these playoffs, because
my biggest question. I just feel like Kyrie has been one of the people who has really sort of like thrown off the chemistry with the Cavs this year, and he hasn't looked great all year. He's sort of like a rich man's Jamal Crawford at this point. And if he shows up, then it really, if he gets his game back over the next 2 months, and that's the other thing, the Cavs can sort of build momentum sort of rolling through the East. And if he shows up, then it'll be pretty interesting. But if not, like it's almost like he dominates the ball so much that you wonder whether they would be better with Dele, which is a super hot take.
Well, if you look at their lineup data, their best two lineups basically are when they go, you know, smaller with Thompson, Love, and LeBron in the front court. And then, you know, there's the Dele or there's Kyrie. I mean, those interchange either of those two guys, that's their best lineup. That's their best look. And
yeah,
there's nobody who can really hang with that lineup in the Eastern Conference. Hey, real quick here, you know, every year around this time, mid-April, I start to get this itch like
this sounds like an ad. I love it.
I'm not going to Harry's Razors. It's not like a facial. It's not like a facial itch. I'm still just trying to get facial hair, by the way, before I can get some razors. But
it's because of the vegetarian thing, man.
Yeah, it might be. So here's the itch, though. Don't we need to reseed these playoffs? I mean, once the matchups finally came out, and now we're talking about, you know, Cleveland, and are they going to be able to get back to the finals? And you look at the rest of these matchups in the Eastern Conference. Are you excited about any of these series? I'm not. And
this is a great way to start our playoff preview.
This is an annual rite of passage for me. It's like tax day. Like every time tax day comes around, it just like clicks in my head. Let's complain about the East. But don't you also wish we could have Oklahoma City Cleveland as a conference finals matchup, or Cleveland San Antonio with Oklahoma City against you know, Golden State? I mean, don't you want to have the best four teams as the final four? And right now we're set up to have, you know, Cleveland versus, you know, best case scenario, Miami, right?
You're talking to someone who hates change.
Uh-oh.
I don't want a 16 team NCAA tournament type thing where like the Grizzlies are playing the Pacers or whatever. Like I like the conferences. I do. I mean, this hypothetical world where we get down to the final four and it's reseeded would be really cool. And that's something I don't know how you would pull it off, but if the first round were conferences and then you could sort of reseed from there, might be my sort of dream scenario, like the compromise at least. But I mean, let's talk about the first round.
Okay, so here's the thing. I agree with you in theory, but let's do it in practice. Like, tell me why I should be watching any of these Eastern Conference series.
All right. I will tell you that. I was watching last night. Trying to figure out the Eastern Conference playoff scenarios was impossible. I sat there pulling up different, because I was supposed to write like a preview, and I'm writing one for tomorrow, and I was sitting there trying to like work ahead. And it was just, I read several different scenario articles and then was watching it and trying to figure it all out. And it was just impossible. So thank you to the Eastern Conference for making me feel really dumb. But I'm really glad that that we don't have, because Heat Celtics would have been the best series for the first round. But I'm glad that we don't have to. I'm glad that like both of those teams could conceivably move on, because I think they're the two most interesting teams outside of the Cavs in the East. And absent Heat Celtics, we also have like Celtics Hawks will be a battle for six or seven games, and that'll be a lot of fun. And then I think I'm willing to sacrifice the first round of Heat Hornets for if it means that we get Heat Cavs. I mean, that'll be so much fun.
It all comes down to Heat Cavs. So the fact that that can take place in the conference finals stage, I think, is the one redeeming aspect of this Eastern Conference bracket. I'm wondering how many of these series the NBA is even going to televise. I mean, these are bad.
Yeah, no, and the West are really bad. Like that is, I don't even really know. Hold on, let me look it up. Like, who are the Mavs playing?
The Mavs are playing the Thunder.
I don't want to watch that series.
The Spurs are playing the Grizzlies. I think we've got a nice series with the Clippers and Blazers. I'm sure you're going to watch every second of that, because those are your guys.
It's going to be a great series.
Oh, for sure. And I think Warriors and Rockets will have moments. You know, I think there's going to be some, not drama necessarily, but I think there's going to be, you know, some must-see TV from that.
Okay.
So here's an interesting way of looking at the first round matchups after I've just been making fun of them. If we rank them in terms of point differential, so how close are these teams aligned? Here's the closest or the most even matchups in order down to the most lopsided. So the closest is Hawks-Celtics. The second closest is Heat-Hornets. The third closest is Raptors-Pacers. The fourth closest is Clippers-Blazers. Then it goes Cavs-Pistons. Then it goes Thunder-Mavericks. Then it goes Warriors-Rockets. And actually, the most lopsided series is the Spurs-Grizzlies, because obviously the Grizzlies have kind of fallen apart. But what I think that tells you is that the upset potential in the Eastern Conference is kind of there. You know, if you've got four of the top five closest series in terms of point differential, and you've got the top three, you know, basically the 2-3-4 matchups all being the three closest series, all being in the East, I mean, that I think is the best reason to watch the Eastern Conference, is because you kind of don't know who's going to win.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. It's all up for grabs. Although you do know that the Cavs are probably going to win in the end, but even the Cavs have looked just vulnerable enough to make you sort of wonder. But hold on, we'll come back to that. Have one more break here. FanDuel, baseball season is underway and it's time to get in the game. But this year, you can be more than a fan. You can run your own team on FanDuel. It's the most fun you can have as a baseball fan. FanDuel isn't just for the stats experts. FanDuel is for every fan, from the casual players to the hardcore seam heads. Set up a listener league with your friends or play to win cash from fans around the world. Entry fees start at just $1 and there's no season long commitment. Play for one day or for the rest of the season, plus playoffs. And here's the best part. FanDuel is giving new players their first game risk-free. Here's what you do. Just go to FanDuel.com and enter the code OPENFLOOR. Then enter a FanDuel league or start one with your friends. If you don't win any prize in your first contest, you get that $10 right back to your FanDuel account for more play. That's FanDuel.com with our code OpenFloor for a risk-free tournament at up to $10. So, all right. So what else? What else are you looking forward to with the playoffs? Anything? Should we table? I mean, we're going to be talking playoffs for a couple weeks. So it's cool with me if we're just like exhausted after the last week of Mamba madness and the Warriors. Cause I'm really sort of like, I'm excited. Heat Celtics last night, the Celtics comeback. I don't know if you watched it in Golden State, but that was wild. And it sort of like, got me ready for basketball that actually means something after the last month.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty insane. What a turnaround of that game. I think the one thing that I'm looking forward to, at least in the Western Conference bracket, is that we have a great matchup between Enes Kanter, who is like going to be the number one target of intelligent coaches among the best teams in the West, versus Rick Carlisle, probably the most ruthless, right up there with Popovich in terms of, you know, picking on people. Like that could be, yeah, that could be one of the greatest like coach on opposing player bully matchups in a while. And I think it might be the best reason to watch that series.
That's actually a good point. I was making fun of that series, but Carlisle and the combination of Carlisle and Dirk always make these series more fun than you would think they would be.
Yeah, I mean, they've pushed the Spurs in the past, and certainly Oklahoma City to me is not as good as the Spurs team was during that championship year. And I think that's of all the things I'm looking for in the first round, it's how do Oklahoma City's supporting cast guys, all of whom are basically playoff virgins, how do they conduct themselves? I mean, can they keep it together or do they just lose it? And you know, past that, I think the Warriors and Spurs are on track for sweeps. I think Clippers Blazers should be really interesting. I mean, Blake, I think is a huge storyline. What does he look like? He's got a very he's got a very favorable matchup against the Blazers in terms of they like to play small, and he could kind of bully them if they do go small. So to me, it's kind of, is OKC ready for prime time in terms of their supporting guys, and what does Blake look like? Those are the two leading stories in the Western Conference.
That's good. I like it. Yeah, I'm excited to see Blake because it's going to be interesting, number one, for these playoffs. If Blake is healthy and at 100%, then, you know, the a potential matchup with the Warriors is not total. It's not as lopsided as you might think or as some of the recent Warriors Clippers games would indicate. But at this and at the same time, if Blake's not healthy, A, that makes the Clippers a lot more beatable, and then B, it makes Blake a lot more tradable or a lot less tradable this summer, and sort of it complicates things. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But let's move on because our final topic of the day here, coaches are getting fired. There are changes happening around the league, and it's a great day, Ben.
Well, here's my favorite part about yesterday. I just love the mental picture of the PR staffs of these teams that, you know, had disappointing seasons. And then they had the amazing realization, hey, if we fire our coach today, no one will even care or notice. And I love that.
That's right.
It was beautifully right in sync between Minnesota and Washington with the coach dumps. I mean, that's better than the Friday afternoon dump. You know, that's better than the Labor Day weekend, right? You know, right before the holiday news dump. If you can,
and it did not escape me. It did not escape me. I'm free. This is like a wonderful. It's spring. Randy Whitman is no longer the coach of the Washington Wizards, and life is good.
I mean, if you could fire your coach on a day when Kobe goes for 60 and the Warriors win 73 games, you deserve the PR, the Brian McIntyre award that the NBA hands out. It's yours. And actually, it's going to be a split this year between two of the teams who we knew had to fire their coaches, and they did it. And I can't wait to see where both Minnesota and Washington go with their coaching searches. And that's the question. Who do you want?
So I'm feeling no pain right now. Now that Whitman is gone, I am suddenly optimistic about everything. Even Scott Brooks, who I'm pretty sure was leaked as a potential replacement specifically to troll me, but I'm cool with it. Scott Brooks is a good coach, and although if they're bringing in Scott Brooks to chase Kevin Durant, then that's pretty depressing and will end badly. But I think here's my thing with the Wiz is there's so many different problems around the organization and just infrastructure wise that like one coach is not going to solve anything. But Whitman was problem number one. He was holding them back, and they would have made the playoffs with a decent coach. You don't even need Brad Stevens, but it's just like there were so many winnable games that got away. And so it's nice to move on. You know, this is progress. Well, I'm not even asking for perfection. I don't need to be the Warriors, but this is progress. I think if you're asking me who I want, I mean, the answer is Tibbs. Like, we need Tibbs. Get in and maybe trade for Jimmy Butler, who's all. It's hard to figure out what exactly is happening in Chicago and why, but first things first, Tibbs is the top of my list. I'd love Jeff Van Gundy, although that would probably involve giving him management control and moving on from Ernie Grunfeld, which would also be a healthy move at this point after 13 or 14 years. So, but it's like the bar is set so low that anyone would be an upgrade.
Well, you got me excited thinking about a John Wall, Jimmy Butler backcourt. I mean, holy cow.
It would be great, right? And Beal, like the Bulls can talk themselves into Beal. Why not?
Well, I actually think the Wizards job, it has a little bit of that instant bump. Like if you're a coach and you look at the way things set up, you know, it's always about assuming Beal is healthy, but even just having a full season of Markieff Morris where you can play that spread style, and you know, another year of development from Otto Porter, he's more comfortable in that role. I mean, to me, that's a job where you should be able to bump your wins up, you know, 3, 4, 5 wins, just, you know, if you're competent. I mean, I think there's upside potential.
You can, by not being Randy Whitman, you can bump your wins up by 4 or 5. By being competent and actually like a good coach, we're looking at like a 7, 8, 9, 10 win improvement. So like there's a lot of potential, and more than half the roster is on a 1 year deal because we built the entire future around signing Kevin Durant this summer, which isn't going to happen, but there's a lot of different directions you can go beyond that.
Well, who is the coach, do you think? Is it Brooks who would give them the best shot at luring KD, or is there even a coach who at this point could kind of convince him to go to Washington? I'm not sure there is one.
I don't think there is one either. I think you'd have to go, like, I think if you gave Tibbs control of everything or at least made him coach and hired a new GM, I think it basically you need guys who sort of scream credibility and scream that there's a new regime, because that could change things. But I don't see them going that direction. And I don't think Scott Brooks is the answer either. So it's a little tricky as far as that's concerned.
I'm still really crossing my fingers that Thibodeau is smart enough to realize that he just needs to take that Minnesota job. I mean, I mentioned this before, but that just lines up so perfectly. Sorry to crush your dreams about that, but honestly, like, if you're Tibbs, and
it's probably healthy.
You know, he had this same situation before. Remember when he got hired by the Bulls, there was multiple teams coming after him. New Orleans made him a big offer and all that, and he ended up taking a Bulls job, which maybe some people were surprised by, and I think it was the upside talent of the roster was his deciding factor. I think everyone's going to be going after Thibodeau. To me, he's the best name out there, especially if you're a disappointing team that needs instant results, and there's lots of them. You know, I graded all the 30 teams this week. I gave out a lot of Fs and D minuses, you know, so that tells you there's a lot of teams out there that need to think about throwing tons of money at Thibodeau. But to me,
Professor Golliver is tough.
Yeah, no, I'm not even usually, but I was just like, there was
it's just been that kind of year around the NBA. Yeah,
it really has.
Can I tell you one other thing? We've spent a lot of time making fun of Hassan Whiteside, hyping his free agent sweepstakes and wondering who is going to pay him $100-$120 million this summer. I kind of think he'd be a good fit in Washington.
Well, you know who,
which is so scary.
Well, I just got back from Portland, spent a week up there, And guess what? The Blazers fans are saying exactly the same thing.
Oh, man.
Everybody's talking themselves into it. Time to hop on board.
Yeah, it was pretty funny watching him in the Celtics game last night because, like, he's very, very good, very talented. But then he does things that bad players do, which is, like, when he blocks a shot, like, he'll block a shot five rows out of bounds because it looks cool. And like, even though he could sort of like keep it in play and give the Heat a chance at a loose ball, but like he's wired a little differently. Having said that, I think that if you space the court around him, like you can do a lot of cool things and it's worth a gamble. I don't know if I'm ready to officially endorse Whiteside to the Wiz or Whiteside to the Blazers, because that's my second favorite team. But it's going to be interesting, man.
Well, so two thoughts. I mean, number one, anytime there's a Morris brother involved, I want the second. I want the second Morris brother involved. So I think if we're talking about dream front lines for Washington next year, it's Marcus Morris, Markieff Morris, Hassan Whiteside, and I think you're set. I mean, that
what could go wrong?
74 win potential.
Yeah. So any other vacancies around the league?
Well, I mean, the Minnesota thing
that have you excited. That was a terrible tease.
Well, here's the thing with the Minnesota job. And I, you know, just having watched them play against the Blazers, they won on the buzzer. Karl Anthony Towns has just this great, you know, game winner with like a second left to beat Portland.
He's so good, man. I mean, he can do everything.
He's unbelievable. And just the way that they interact with him, he doesn't maybe have that superstar moxie on the court quite yet, because who does at his age? But like, it's already his locker room, you know, seeing how those guys hang out together and how much they were hyping him up after that game, how happy he was, how comfortable he was. I mean, this guy is everything that you want in a franchise player. And I think, you know, if you're a coach, you know how we always talk about like, oh, market doesn't matter as much anymore for these superstar guys. You know, you can be famous anywhere. I think to a certain degree, your coaching future is going to be very similar. And Minnesota has never been a popular destination for players, for coaches, for front office executives. Look at their track record of guys they've had in there.
Well,
the last 10 years,
they refuse to hire outside of the Minnesota family,
yeah,
which is pretty impressive.
It's like, yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, maybe that's a policy, or maybe that's their only options. Yeah,
Glenn Taylor's just hiring his, you know, distant cousins and everything to run every aspect of the organization.
Unless you were a golden gopher at one point in your life.
Exactly. But this is the turning point moment, is what I'm saying, though. You have Karl Anthony Towns. This is no longer the time to be that small buddy-buddy little Timberwolves network. Like, swing big, put up the money, pay up, and go get a really, really good coach so you don't waste Karl Anthony Towns' career and you get the absolute most out of him, because you have a potential here to be amazing. I mean, you've missed the playoffs for like 10 years in a row. You have a potential, legitimately, starting next season, to make the playoffs for 10 years in a row. It could be a completely new day.
Oh, yeah.
So no pressure, just get the right coach.
So do you have any dreams for the Kings?
Well,
I mean, I don't know what you do in Sacramento.
Yeah, I don't know. And I'm not totally sure who would take that job. Everything that I just said about the Timberwolves job, the exact opposite is true about the Sacramento job.
My dream scenario for Sacramento is that Vivek is watching the playoffs and he's watching TNT, and he's taken with Reggie Miller's insight.
Oh,
and
God.
offers Reggie $35 million to come coach the Kings for the next 5 years. And we're all emancipated. But beyond that, I have no idea what Sacramento should do.
Well, you could say the same thing about Mark Jackson, right? It's like,
well, so I don't hate Mark. I think Mark Jackson he was a better coach than he got credit for. He's not Steve Kerr, but he's also not like Randy Whitman level. So I have a soft spot because he's taken a lot of heat over the past few years, and he's not Reggie Miller. He's not Randy Whitman. And like, I'd like to see him get another shot somewhere.
Well, what about some of these guys who have been fired who hardly ever find their names in rumors? So I'm talking about guys like Brian Shaw, Jeff Hornacek. I mean, do you think any of those guys are going to reemerge, or is it going to be, I don't know. I mean, that's it's really weird how the buzz around coaches works, because it's like you're either the hot assistant who hasn't been proven to be terrible yet, or you're the coach who had a really good track record. So therefore, now you're going to be back in the game because all these other bad teams kind of want to recapture your magic. But
yeah, 100%.
But if you've been fired and you don't have a great track record, you just disappear from the face of the earth.
I would like to see Hornacek get another shot. He's also, having said that, here is life calling my bluff. Because he's been mentioned with the Wizards for the Wizards job, and those teams were always so bad on defense that it kind of worries me a little bit. And but I also think like it wasn't his fault that. That his team was owned by Robert Sarver. It wasn't his fault that Ryan McDonough thought it was a good idea to bring in three ball dominant point guards, and things just got really dysfunctional. And you know, a lot of smart people around the league think that he's like a great coach and a smart guy. So I would feel better with Hornacek coming on board in DC than I would with someone like Scott Brooks. Just because I think Brooks deserves another shot also, but he might be a better fit with like the Lakers and a younger team. Because like the Wizards, the Wizards are basically smack in the middle of John Wall's prime. So I don't want someone who's supposed to grow for the next 10 years, like bring in a coach who knows what he's doing.
You could also reenact the whole towel throwing incident between Hornacek and Markieff. That'd be fantastic.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That'd be a fantastic way to get some good buzz going. You could maybe even have like a
75 wins.
You could have a tie-in with the fans where everybody gets a free towel to throw at Hornacek or something like that. You know, you could really fan appreciation night could be great next year. One question on the jobs front though. If you had to be the coach of either the Nets or the Kings, and you had to lock into like the standard contract's usually like 4 years guaranteed for three. So you had to throw away the next 3 years of your life. Great that you'd be making, uh-huh. You'd be making a lot of money. Would you rather be the coach of the Nets or the Kings?
Definitely. I had this discussion earlier in the year when people were making fun of that Spurs guy, Sean Marks, for going to the Nets. I would go to Brooklyn. That's a good lifestyle. So, like at worst, you're in New York City. Life is good. You're making a lot of money. Sacramento is really as far away from New York City as you're going to get. And you're living life with like Rajon Rondo and Boogie and like the ghost of Ben McLemore. It's not great. So I definitely go Brooklyn every time.
I love that the basketball didn't even factor into the decision, really.
Oh, no, well, because it's bleak in both places. But like you got it at that point, you have to look around and talk about lifestyle.
Well, I feel you. OK, so these are the key questions that the coaching free agents are going to be asking themselves. Like, is it worth living in New York if I have to coach the Nets?
And is Minneapolis and Minnesota winters is that worth it for the chance to coach Karl Towns for the next 10 years?
Well, yeah, if I was the Timberwolves, my pitch to Thibodeau would just be, look, we know it's cold outside, but we've got climate controlled video rooms. Your office has heat. Like that's all you need.
Well, and every person from Minnesota will always tell you about the tunnels, the heated tunnels, and that it's not that bad. And you can get automatic starting cars so that you can like sit in your living room and start the car off to get it warm as you walk outside. Like they've perfected it out there.
Oh, then there's nothing standing in the way from this master plan.
So I hope Tibbs is listening. But this has been good. You can follow Ben Golliver on Twitter at Ben Golliver. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Sharp. And we will come back. We'll have more to say about the playoffs. We're going to keep going all the way through. And thank you for listening. We're dedicating this podcast in loving memory to the Mamba. And we'll be back next week.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.